Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Eric D. Lamore. I'm a professor in the Department of English, and I'm presenting my fall 2020 Descargo report. Now, my project is called, quote, Unstable as Water, close quotes, Early Black Atlantic Literature and Textual Fluidity. This is a monograph project, and I thought it would be helpful to break down a few key terms in that title. As it states here, when I reference the term early Black Atlantic, what I'm talking about is the texts that were related or written in English by individuals of African descent and published in the Atlantic world before 1800. So these individuals were not necessarily African Americans, but these were individuals of African descent who had various experiences within the Atlantic world, and including Africa, the West Indies, the North American colonies, and also England and or other places in Europe as well. That other key term, textual fluidity, I define as any work of literature that exists in more than one edition. So in this monograph, I'm taking stock of a very large world of textuality when it comes to the canon or group of texts known as early Black Atlantic literature. I'm studying authorized editions. So these were editions that were supervised, edited, revised, copyrighted, and or sold by individuals of African descent. I'm also studying a number of unauthorized editions. So these were essentially pirated or bootlegged editions that the early Black Atlantic orator or writer did not have control over, did not supervise, and in some cases did not even know about the existence of these particular editions. And in many of the unauthorized editions, they contain traces of non-authorial intervention practices, meaning that someone like an editor, a printer, etc., have changed certain portions of the text. I'm also taking a look at some abridged editions. So these are shortened or condensed editions, and typically these were designed for different types of readers than the first edition or traditional book that came out. So one example would be an abridged edition that was created and edited by a Quaker woman named Abigail Field Mott, who took Olaude Equiano's best-selling autobiography, which is a book over 300 pages, and condensed it into a 30-page book for African-American children studying at New York African Free Schools. I'm also taking a look at posthumous editions. So these are essentially post-death editions, so well after the early Black Atlantic orator or writer was dead, the editions of their books continued to circulate within the Atlantic world. And last semester, I was very interested in extending my understanding of the early Black Atlantic author, whose name was Odaba Cubano. Now, Cubano is important because he published first in 1787 a book called Thoughts and Sentiments on the Evil of Slavery. And compared to other works of literature in the early Black Atlantic literary canon, Cubano's book, at least the 1787 edition, may be considered the most radical. And like a number of his early Black Atlantic colleagues who either orally related or wrote works of literature, Cubano argued that both the transatlantic slave trade and institution of slavery should end immediately within the context of Great Britain and its colonies. So obviously this bold argument, and you could say it was an argument that was ahead of its time, impacted the reception history, or what you can say the lack of reception history. So we don't really have evidence of any reviews that were published of Cubano's book. Scholars and biographers have not necessarily found a number of letters in which individuals reference the book. And you could say that also abolitionists, British abolitionists, even distance themselves from the book. So this was essentially a commercial and textual failure as well. So in other words, it was not like the best-selling autobiography of, say, an individual like John Merritt or Olauda Equiano. What I focused on was some of the differences in terms of the key changes that Cubano made to his book, especially in the 1791 edition. So the 1791 edition is unique in that particular book. On the title page, Cubano makes it clear that he is not writing to white Britons, but he's very much interested in teaching a readership whom he called the Sons of Africa. So one could say that Cubano was writing exclusively for individuals of African descent within Great Britain. And I think he did that in order to teach the next generation of Afro-British subjects how to make arguments against apologists. In other words, these were the individuals who argued in favor of the transatlantic slave trade and institution of slavery. And he wanted to shape the next generation of individuals who could continue the political fight and political activism that him, Equiano, and other individuals started within the context of late 18th century Great Britain. I also started to think about how Cubano impacted his friend and colleague, Olauda Equiano. So scholars essentially agree that Equiano, who published the authorized first edition of his autobiography in 1789, so 2 years after the first edition of Cubano's thoughts, these scholars typically maintain that Equiano likely co-wrote with Cubano the 1787 edition. So these individuals obviously knew each other and worked together closely. And what I'm now starting to put together is how Equiano learned from the commercial failure of Cubano in his 1787 book in terms of not advancing the most radical anti-slave trade and anti-slavery political arguments in ways that allowed him to shape more successful and commercially successful arguments within his best-selling autobiography. So I'm starting to pursue those connections essentially in terms of what did Equiano learn about shaping anti-slave trade and anti-slavery arguments from the commercial failure of the 1787 edition of Thoughts and Sentiments on the Evil of Slavery, again, that he co-wrote with Cubano. Now, in terms of publications, so I have a handful here. One is a book chapter called, quote, Unstable as Water, Reading the Fluid Eye in the Early Black Atlantic. And that's going to appear in a book called History of African American Autobiography. And that's edited by Joycelyn K. Moody. And that will appear in a Cambridge University Press book. And as I note here, that is in press. Hopefully that book will come out, say, by the end of this year. I also revised and finished up another book chapter called The Circulation of Early Black Atlantic Literature. So you can tell by the titles of these two book chapters that this work is all related to the larger project that I just articulated. So that chapter will be in a book called African American Literature in Transition. That's edited by Rhonda Thomas, and that will be volume one of that particular series. And it's also going to be published by Cambridge University Press. And hopefully that book will appear either at the end of this year or maybe early 2022. I'm also pleased to report that I submitted the manuscript in September 2020 of my book called Abigail Field Mott's 1829, The Life and Adventures of Olauda Equiano, a scholarly edition. So that's a book that's under contract at the West Virginia University Press, and I'm just waiting for readers' reports and continuing to refine the manuscript. And then a more lengthy essay that I wrote for that book is called Rethinking Textual Paradigms in Early Black Atlantic Literary Studies. And again, that will appear in the scholarly edition as well. In terms of fellowships, I'm still doing a handful of fellowships just because of COVID, breaking up the traditional fellowship cycle. So I'm finishing up a 2019-2020 Reese Fellowship for the History of the Book in America at the Library Company of Philadelphia. I should finish that in March, probably late March. I'm also finishing up a 2019-2020 Margaret Guest Fellowship at Haverford College in Pennsylvania. I'm doing all this work virtually, of course. At Haverford, I've been taking a look at books published by Samuel Wood and Sons and a number of letters written and received by Abigail Field Knott. I also have an appointment, a 2019-2020 visiting fellow appointment at the Eccles Center for American Studies. That's a part of the British Library on hold. I'm doing some of that work virtually, and there may be a chance, depending on the circumstances, that I can go there this coming summer. And then this semester, so spring of 2021, I'm also a remote scholar via the Faculty Resource Network at New York University, which gives me access to the wonderful databases and resources at that institution. In terms of fellowship submissions for last semester, I'm pleased to report that I submitted an application for a Library Company of Philadelphia-National Endowment for the Humanities postdoctoral fellowship, and I won that. So I'm one of three postdoctoral fellows for an NEH award at the Library Company. And I have two other fellowships, pending fellowship submissions. One is an American Antiquarian Society National Endowment for the Humanities long-term fellowship, and then also a short-term fellowship that I applied for at the Lapidus Center for the Historical Analysis of Transatlantic Slavery, which is part of the New York Public Library. So thanks for listening, everyone. Be well and take care.